May it please the court, counsel. I'm attorney Paul E. Sims, and I represent appellate Larry S. Gooden in this matter. This case is an appeal from the judgment and sentence entered by the Honorable David R. Herndon, Chief Judge of the Southern District of Illinois. The appellant, my client, pled guilty to two counts of a five-count indictment, and prior to sentencing upon a motion by the government, the court made a finding that the defendant had breached the plea agreement, and the court proceeded on the guilty plea as an open plea. The court sentenced my client to 360 months of imprisonment on count one for conspiracy to commit kidnapping and a consecutive 240 months on count four for use of a firearm during a crime of violence. And it's that 240-month consecutive term of imprisonment that is the subject of this appeal. Under United States versus Booker, the Supreme Court held that the appellate court should review sentences to determine whether they are unreasonable. And under United States versus Vaughn, this court said that such reasonless review is undertaken in light of the factors in Title 18, United States Code, Section 3553. An analysis of the guidelines and the factors in Title 18, United States Code, Section 3553, showed that the ultimate sentence imposed by the district court as to Mr. Gooden was unreasonable and not justified under Gall versus United States. If we look at the factors that the court considered, such as under the nature and circumstances of the offense, you see that the district court stated that the conduct was off the scale of seriousness and violence, which was a conclusory statement. The factual statements that the court wants to cite in this was that a firearm was discharged during the struggle with a female victim. The firearm that the court is citing was not in my client's possession at the time. It was his co-defendant. It was his co-defendant who initiated the contact with this female victim. It was the co-defendant who told my client, "Watch my back," while he attempted to rape the female victim. The defendant was being sentenced for crimes that go hand in hand with violence, and yet the sentencing court fails to point out what it was about the defendant's behavior, not the co-defendant's behavior, but the defendant's behavior that was so outside the heartland that warranted a 100% increase from the guidelines, the sentencing guideline recommendation. If you look at the history and the characteristic of the aspect of the sentencing guidelines, you see that the factual statement that my client, Mr. Gooden, has a prior conviction for residential burglary and aggravated vehicle hijacking in itself is not an aggravating factor. Those factors have already been accounted for in his criminal history. So that in itself does not give rise to a cause to give my client a 100% increase in the recommendation from the guidelines. The seriousness of the offense and respect for the law. The sentencing court states that since the statute calls for at least a 10-year sentence, it's suggested to the district court that the case in bar, a guideline sentence on count four is less than what is necessary. However, the actions, again, that the court speaks of, the gun discharging when the victim four tried to save herself, was not the actions of my client, but the actions of his co-defendant. The district court goes on to state, and when it addresses the adequate deterrence for criminal conduct, that my client is a person that doesn't understand that he's going to be removed from society for these type of actions, that he doesn't get it. But yet and still, it does not point out to a incident or a factor or a characteristic of my client that would support such an evaluation.
Let me ask you this. There was a request for a psychological examination to determine whether he was competent to stand trial. Had he ever been diagnosed as bipolar during the course of his life? I mean, with the diagnosis. I understand he was cleared under competence.
Yes, Your Honor, but one of the things that I'd like to bring out, since you brought that report up, he was competent to stand trial, but it did say he suffers from a mental disease under the law. The district court.
Well, I thought the finding was that he didn't meet the full criteria for depressive or bipolar disorder. He exhibited some of the symptoms of mood disorder, including mild depression and irritability and some other things. And so that was why I asked the question, had he ever been diagnosed by a doctor or psychiatrist as bipolar?
He was. I understand the records were hard to obtain. Since he was in the public school system, the pre-sentence investigator was able to establish that he had mental problems from early on in childhood. The report itself states that he presents with an antisocial personality disorder, and one of the symptoms is a pervasive pattern of disregard for violations of the rights of others beginning in childhood or early adolescence and continuing until adulthood. This report accurately describes my client. The contention that I have with the sentencing with the district court is it gave no weight to this diagnosis. My client, in all means, is a criminal, a dangerous criminal. But what I'm saying and what I'm asking the court to take into contention is the fact that under Section 3553, in order for through Gaul, in order for the court to depart upwardly 100%, then they should cite something of significance that is outside the heartland and was not considered by the Sentencing Commission when they devised the sentencing guidelines.
Judge Hurdon made it pretty clear that this was one of the most egregious cases he had come across. And I can speak for my colleagues, but it's a very, very bad case here, what he did. This six-day crime spree was just shocking.
It is, to say the least, Your Honor. However,
so when you start with that, the guideline range properly calculated, I think, could have given him a 525-month sentence.
Correct, Your Honor.
Went a little bit beyond that.
But the question is that I pose to this court is, if you're going to deviate from the guidelines, does not Gaul state that you have to justify that significant deviation?
But you know, you have to look at the experience of a judge hearing these kind of cases. I don't know how to play the piano, but I know when you hit the wrong note when you're playing Beethoven's Fifth. And you look at what happened here, it's really scary stuff.
And my heart goes out to each and every victim. But yet and still, Your Honor, in order for the judge to deviate from the guidelines, he must show or give a significant reason as to my client, not from the actions of his co-defendant, but from my client. My client, as the mental evaluation stated, suffered from a mental disease. And one of the aspects of his mental disease was that he had a very low disregard for his fellow human being. What we're asking and what we asked at sentencing is that he be given some type of mental help. The district court stated that it felt that in spite of my client's mental disease, he could not be rehabilitated. And we believe that at that point, the district court had made a conclusion that the facts did not support. I'd like to save what little time I have left.
Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel James Crow for the United States. It's noteworthy that, again, here today, what is not contested are any of the harrowing facts of this case. And so I think, as Judge Evans has properly asked defense counsel to evaluate this case through the optics of those facts. And that, I think, expands significantly the realm of reasonableness in terms of what sentences would be reasonable within this case. And certainly at the end of the day, it's the government's position that the one imposed by Judge Herndon was, absolutely. Judge Williams, in the prior case argued before the court this morning, called for, suggested that perhaps the district court in that case might have put a little more meat on the bones to enable this court to perform meaningful 3553A review within the rubric of reasonableness. I'd submit, Your Honors, that Judge Herndon in this case served up this court with a four-course meal of analysis and gave the defendant an itemized bill for his reasoning at the end of his 22-page sentencing order. That order came shortly after this court's invitation in its Higdon and Burton decisions, in which it suggested that perhaps in cases where there is a variance upward from the guidelines, that the district court consider memorializing its rationale in writing. Judge Herndon accepted that invitation and then some, dedicating some 13 of the 22 pages of that sentencing order to analysis of the operative 3553A factors as the district court viewed them in this case. Moreover, within that analysis, Your Honors, is significant reference to the facts of the case. In fact, the basis for the would-be departure, as it were, on count four from the 120-month sentence prescribed by the guidelines to the 240-month sentence imposed by Judge Herndon is Judge Herndon's conclusion that the facts themselves of this weapon being brandished against four separate victims in three separate instances are not taken into account by the guidelines. That is a fact-based analysis that the court engaged in below. The court concluded that the guidelines were, in essence, as to count four, the 924C allegation, too formulaic to capture the conduct here, and that, therefore, a sentence under 3553A was necessary. The district court noted that this is an extraordinary case, and it seems like Judge Evans, I can't speak for certainly this court, but it seems like this case must stand out. The nature and extent of the violence in this case, I would be surprised if this court has seen many recently anyway that rival it. The escalating criminal violence of the defendant, the district court concluded that this defendant is on an upward tear towards committing additional offenses. And to that end, it's corroborated. Judge Williams asked if this defendant had a history of bipolar disorder, and the PSR, which is in the record at document 112, paragraph 100, one paragraph dedicated to mental and emotional health, notes that the defendant had once been hospitalized in a St. Louis psychiatric facility when he was 10 or 11 years old. He was referred there after he tried to shoot his brother. Additional information revealed that he suffered from dyslexia and was prescribed Ritalin. There's no indication of bipolar disorder here. The mental competency evaluations performed by the Bureau of Prisons that are in the record at documents 93 and 94 do conclude that he does have mental disease, but as Judge Williams properly pointed out, it is limited to that of a mood disorder not otherwise specified. None of those undercut Judge Herndon's findings that this defendant has proven that if he is in the community, people are in danger. Indeed, the court put a very fine point on it by saying the defendant is a violent and brutal criminal, and he made reference to that two times in his written order, and it should make society shudder in fear but for the fact that he is considered locked safely away. Those are telling of the extent to which an above-guideline sentence was called for in this case, and the one meted out by the district court certainly could have been greater when one considers the statutory sentence that was available. The statutory sentence for the count four sentence is 120 months to life. Imposing a 240-month sentence is hardly unreasonable, given that that was the weapon, the sawed-off shotgun that is the subject of that count, that was brandished against four victims in three separate instances that the district court is permitted to consider, and a one additional instance involving the rape of a 16-year-old that the district court was careful not to consider because it was not technically before it. The district court ultimately concluded that, quote, people can't live in civilized society with other people that treat normal citizens this way, referring specifically to this defendant's conduct. The district court did not abuse its discretion by fashioning a sentence that protects normal citizens, quote, until such time as Gooden is physically and emotionally unable to harm society anymore, as stated by the district court. That sentence, Your Honor, should therefore be affirmed. I yield the balance of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Sims, you have 1 minute.
The government cites this weapon, this shotgun, this sawed-off shotgun, and my response to that would be, brandished by who? This weapon was not brandished in by my client. It was brandished by the co-defendant, who was given a 120-month sentence in count four. Albeit by a plea agreement, it was still, the judge was not party to that plea agreement, and if he felt that conduct that he is so appalled by in sentencing my client, at that time he could have spoke to it. I'm saying that, yes, if the judge wanted to give him something higher than what was specified in the sentencing commission, by the sentencing commission and the guidelines, then he should be able to justify it, and justify it by actions of my client, not by the co-defendant. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.